It's really a disheartening situation because if you go back to the 70s, Ivory Coast was called the miracle of Africa. I mean, people would go to Abidjan and, you know, compare it to capital cities in the West like Paris and talk about how much progress had happened. And I think when the crisis began, I was actually still in high school. It was in the mid-80s when there was a drop in cocoa and coffee prices. And the leader at the time, President Oufou-Boigny, thought that one of the ways to juggle that crisis was to basically withhold the national production of coffee and cocoa as a way to prompt the prices back up. And fortunately, that particular move backfired. Now, what most people don't know is that to produce this much cocoa and coffee, the country really opened its borders to brothers and sisters from neighboring countries that came in to basically help exploit the resources that were there and the opportunities that you had in agriculture. Now, when the whole system failed, we came to a point where the pie, if you will, shrunk significantly.
The national cake
shrunk significantly. And then the issue of who owned what became the real issue. Now, unfortunately,
What are some of the conditions that led to the shrinkage of that national cake?
I mean, it was literally the drop in price and the fact that we were over-dependent on cocoa and coffee. And the country had really had to borrow quite a bit in order to invest in its fast growth and infrastructure. All of a sudden, you had the significant drop in revenues, but you had costs that were sort of high and rising because the population was still growing and debt was ballooning, and yet the revenues to basically service all of that were not there. So that's where some of the hardships happened. I remember being in high school. I was actually in a public school where everybody was basically admitted through scholarships. And, we saw a significant decline in the resources that the government had. They used to provide books. They couldn't no longer provide those books. You know, you had to go to the sort of the little clinic at the school. There was no medication left. I mean, we could feel it really in terms of the crisis and the fact that the resources were not there. So as you look at the crisis that we face today, it has been turned into a political one, fight between sort of two rival leaders. It has been turned into a kind of pseudo-nationalist.
Yeah, nationalist, yes.
When in fact, the real issue is how do we create a society in Côte d'Ivoire which is a vibrant member of the global debate. We live in a global world where we have to trade, we have to exchange ideas, we have to exchange knowledge, product, services. How do we make sure that we kind of have a role within that global agenda that makes sense? That's really, to me, the issue, because if we can become relevant again economically, what it will do is it will create the conditions for everybody to find the role and the place within that society. And to me, that's what we really have to address if we are going to be able to fundamentally solve the crisis that is happening in Côte d'Ivoire today.
Who controls the resources in Ivory Coast?
Look, it depends on how you define those resources. Of course, over the years, you have a private sector that has grown quite a bit, where you have a number of players that have emerged and, you know, entrepreneurs that have done extremely well. People like Mr. Jean Kaku Diagou, the head of one of the largest insurance companies in West Africa, and other names that I'm not going to kind of name here. So, of course, they have a very high stake, and they have quite a bit in terms of the economic activity, and they are very organized.
So it's a very vibrant private sector that...
Yeah. But at the same time, you also have a number of resources that are still controlled by the central government, which will be basically the kind of resources that are sort of linked to oil, which are linked to resources that, by virtue of the way in which we tap into them, require government involvement. So that's a big part of it. And those resources would also include any foreign development assistance, which is a big picture in Côte d'Ivoire, given the fact that we've actually become now a highly indebted poor country. And finally, you have the vast majority of farmers because the country remains, you know, the top cocoa producer in the world. So you still have quite a bit happening as it relates to economic activity in rural areas.
Now, how much of this has to do with external interest in Ivory Coast resources? Factions?
It's actually very interesting because, as far as I'm concerned, I resist any attempt to outsource or to scapegoat or to blame someone else. I think, you know, Cote d'Ivoire is actually a country that is 50 years old now. It's a country which has a very high number of highly educated people. It's a country that has quite a bit of resources. It's a country with a vibrant culture, whether you look at the food, the music, the way people dress, etc. My sense is that the way we will ever find any real solution to our problems is if we are actually able to own them. So we have to stop blaming whoever we are blaming out there and start looking at ourselves in the mirror. And the person that we see when we look at ourselves in the mirror is the person that is to blame.